You're listening to The Music Show on RN, and it's time for Synergy Percussion to come back into the studio. Synergy Percussion are a venerable performing ensemble, and it's great to be able to welcome them back to The Music Show. Steve Reich composed a piece in, I think it was 1973, called Music for Pieces of Wood, and in a way it's a shame because the title was already taken. It would have been a fantastic title for the piece that Michael Gordon ended up calling Timber. That's the work which Synergy is performing tonight, and I'm delighted to say we're going to get a taste of it right now. We'll be talking afterwards to Louise Devenish, who is the guest artistic director of Synergy for this performance, but let's listen to how Timber starts. That was the opening of Michael Gordon's Timber, played by Synergy Percussion, who on this occasion consist of Bree Van Rijk, Joshua Hill, Daryl Pratt, Jess Champer, Karen Joyce, and the guest artistic director of this performance, Louise Devenish. Thank you. Louise, let's talk about this piece. And perhaps, first of all, we should describe to our listeners what you have been playing, because I can pretty much guarantee that what people are imagining is not what has just happened. You've got planks.
That's right, yes. As the title of the work suggests, the instrumentation is timber. So here in the studio, each of the percussionists, there are six of us, we have a different sized length of timber, which was sourced just from a local hardware wood store and cut randomly to different lengths. So each piece of timber produces a different pitch.
So I'm surprised that they're random. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't been kind of carefully sanding one end to try and get it, you know, a perfect B flat.
Sure. Well, when I say random, that doesn't mean there wasn't a lot of work involved in choosing these random pieces very carefully. So one of the interesting things about the score for this work is that beyond the title, Timber, there are no specifications as to the kind of wooden instrument, how big it is, what the pitches are. All of those choices are left up to the ensemble that's performing it. And in the case of Synergy's version, Ian Cleworth, who listeners might know well, spent a lot of time trying out different types of wood and seeing which had the most beautiful resonance that would be suited to the musical material in this piece.
And so, look, people are going to be interested. What have we got here?
We actually have Oregon wood. So there were a few different types of wood tried out. We tried some local woods, we tried some pine, but it was the Oregon that had the most resonant tone. So that's what we've ended up with.
Any idea why?
why it's the most resonant. I would assume it's got to do with the density of the wood itself. So some of the lighter materials like pine tend not to be so resonant or so complex in their sound. So these are quite heavy slabs of wood, and we've each got two pieces. So one is acting as a resonator for the other, and I think that weight contributes to the warmth.
So you play, Jess has got one on top of another. How does he play them both?
He doesn't.
Okay.
So, yeah, we each play only one of the planks.
Oh.
And depending on the size of the plank we have, that's determined how we've set it up. So the larger planks, we have the plank we play on, and then a plank that's acting as a resonator placed next to it to make the sound a bit warmer. For the smaller pieces, which are about, 45, 50 centimetres long, these ones are stacked one on top of each other, and the resonator is underneath, acting kind of like the underside of a guitar or the underside of a violin would, in resonating the piece of wood from underneath.
Right. But I assume, having said that they're not tuned, you do go out of your way to make sure that there are no two planks that have the same pitch.
Exactly. What we have decided to do is, for the six players, the first player, which in this case is Bree Van Raik, has got the highest pitch, and the sixth player, which is me, has got the lowest pitch, or the largest piece of timber.
Yes. And in terms of what we have just heard, that there seemed to be a certain amount of sort of phasing of dynamics, but is this piece fully notated?
It's entirely notated, yes. Every single note is notated on the page. There's no improvisation there. But the work, because it unfolds over such a long period of time, it is a little bit like a sound bath, if you like. So we have the performers set up in a circle, and this means that the musical material, the crescendos, the decrescendos, are passed around the circle. So when you're listening to the work, whether you're standing in the centre of the circle or on the outside, you can hear these peaks and troughs being passed around the circle spatially. It's a really interesting effect.
And is that notated too? I mean, who is loud first?
Yes. So the dynamics, the peaks are notated. But where that is in the room, where's the start of a circle?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And the number of times you play, I mean, is that open-ended like some of the Steve Reich and Philip Glass pieces where they can last about an hour or they can last about 90 minutes depending upon, how long everybody's up for?
Yes, it's a very, very similar approach. So in some of the Reich works and in this work, Michael Gordon, the number of times a slice of material is repeated, there's a minimum and a maximum suggested amount of repeats that are listed in the score, and then it's up to the ensemble to decide, we want to do this one seven times, this one three times.
And do you move on at the same moment, or is that sort of phased as well?
We each move on at the same time, but because we're all at a different point in the crescendo, it sounds like we're moving one after another, but we're always playing in the same meter.
Okay. So what does it sound like if just one of you is playing? I mean, can you give us a sense of the pattern?
Yeah, sure. So one of the interesting things about these large pieces of timber is that there are different resonances that emerge when you play on different parts of the wood. So I've got a really large piece here, and you can hear at the start of the crescendo, the wood is, I've chosen a thinner sound. So it's what we'd call a nodal point on the plank. And that's where I start the quiet material, and as it gets louder I move in towards the middle, and you'll hear the change in tone and the change in volume. I'll just do a mini version.
So you actually get to know your plank pretty well then?
We're getting to know them. Yeah, that's right.
So would it be possible just to have a sense of that with the entire ensemble then?
Yeah, sure. We'd love to just play the opening of the work. So you'll hear this material be established. Each player will come in at one at a time, and then you'll hear the cycle there.
And from top to bottom, that was Bree Van Raik, Daryl Pratt, Jess Champa, Josh Hill, Karen Joyce and Louise Devenish, who I'm speaking to. Together they're Synergy Percussion, and we just heard a little sample of Michael Gordon's timbre. The question that I suppose has to be asked is why?
Why timbre?
Why this? Well, obviously, but why this this piece, which has no fixed pitches and is essentially one sound, or a kind of monochrome piece, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. It takes a single idea and a single sound source and really explores it in depth, in detail, over an extended period of time. So it means that in playing it and listening to it, you go on more of a kind of listening journey than just hearing a short, 5 or 10 minute idea explored quite quickly in a single work. As far as why we're performing it, I think it's fascinating, these kinds of long form works that allow you to listen to a sound source, in this case timbre, in a different way than you normally would. So I think, when you think of wooden percussion instruments, you'll often think of things like woodblocks that are used more for sound effects or to colour an ensemble. Rarely do you think of a single piece of wood as being the heart of a musical work, and that's one of the interesting things, I think, about this piece.
Yes. I wonder whether we could... I mean, Michael Gordon, together with Julia Wolf and David Lang, is one of the founders of Bang on a Can, but they haven't been going as long as Synergy, which is now, 40 years old?
44
years old, which would make it, that's almost half the history of the percussion ensemble. Percussion ensemble itself isn't a century, is it? So
that's true, yeah. I think percussion ensembles, they first emerged around 1930, so around that time. And I think that's been one of the major developments in Western art music in the 20th century, was the rise of the percussion ensemble from something that was kind of a novelty to something that is as established and common, if you like, as other Western instrumental ensembles. And it's true for sure that Synergy Percussion was one of the earlier ensembles established, not just in Australia, but globally. The early 1970s was a time when groups were being established for the first time in many countries.
Yes. Most of the people in this room weren't even born when Synergy started. But you've been studying this. I think you've written a PhD on this topic of percussion ensembles and looked at Synergy. And I wonder whether you've got any theories about how the repertory has changed over the years.
Sure. Are you talking about the Australian percussion repertoire?
Well, if you like, yes. But I mean, you could broaden it if you want.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. If you look back over the history of percussion ensemble music, you can certainly see different trends arising at different times. So if we go back to the beginning and think about works like Edgard Varèse's Ionization that use different percussion instruments, it was almost like a showcase of different sounds, like, look what happens if we use the claves in this way, what happens if we include a siren. It was a bit experimental and a lot about rhythm and a lot about texture.
But not much about pitch.
Not much about pitch, that's true. So in percussion ensemble history, if you like, it was later, so 70s, 80s, 90s, that tuned percussion ensemble music, marimba quartets and things like that, really became popular. It's not that they didn't exist before, I think they just became more common during that time period, and they're still hugely popular, but I feel like since 2000, in the last nearly 20 years, there's almost been a return to this experimental sense of making percussion ensemble music, exploring sounds for sound's sake and really seeking to make new work that uses unexpected instruments and textures as much as anything else.
And I don't know whether it's true, you would probably know better than I, but I get a sense that composers are leaning more towards not so much playing planks, but playing pieces writing pieces which have a narrower range of colour again. I mean, there was a time, maybe early in Synergy's career, where you had everything, including the kitchen sink, on stage, and now you don't so much, do you?
I think that's so true. I think particularly in Australian percussion music, if you look at the works that were being composed in the 70s and 80s in particular, you can totally imagine the scenario of the percussionist inviting the composer into the studio, the composer going, wow, there are so many things in here, I'm going to use all of them, and the percussionist saying, fantastic, no one's written me a piece, I'll do it, we'll use all of them. And then over time, I think everyone got a bit wise to the logistics of that, but also to what we might be missing if we try and include loads of instruments. Do we really get to explore all of them fully in any given work? So it's, I think it's a natural progression.
It's like the early days of electronic music where the piece isn't over because I haven't pressed this button
exactly,
yet.
Exactly, that's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. Also, of course, the musical styles have changed. I mean, Varèse was a modernist. Cage was a modernist and experimentalist who also wrote some of the first percussion ensemble musics. But then along come the aforementioned Steve Reich, who wrote his own piece for Pieces of Wood, and Philip Glass. And that, of course, has changed the style of percussion music enormously, hasn't it?
I think it has. I think in the last sort of 20 or 30 years, we're now seeing many different approaches to percussion ensemble music. So there are strong influences, strong trends in many different ways of writing percussion music, I think.
Yeah, and Bang on a Can itself, of course, in a way has carried that on, hasn't it?
Yeah, hugely influential.
Even the name.
Absolutely, yeah. There's been some really fantastic works for percussion that have come from those three composers, so Julia Wolf's Dark Full Ride and various others, really great, great pieces.
Yes. We're going to listen to one more bit of this piece to finish, and that's the beginning of the second part of this. Could you tell us what happens here? Because it sounds to my ears as though, I know you've said it's fully notated, but it sounds to my ears as though it might not be, as though individual players are getting ahead of each other.
I will try not to take that personally, eh? but the effect that you talk about, it is intentional and it is the effect that listeners will experience. So the work is broadly split into two parts. There's the first half is an exploration of dynamics using one rhythmic line. In the second half of the work, each player is playing two rhythms at once, so what we'd call polyrhythms. And we're each moving through different types of polyrhythms, one after the other, while still crescendoing and decrescendoing. So you'll hear, so player three's left hand might suddenly bring out some fours, and then it will subside into the mix as their other hand will be playing sevens and things like that. So everything is strictly notated.
So it all lines up vertically, does it?
It all lines up vertically. It's just that we're all subdividing each bar slightly differently. So at any given time in the second part of the work, you'll be hearing at least four different rhythms at once.
And is your job then partly as a conductor, or at least as a nodder?
It's absolutely a team effort to keep it together. Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, but we have been working with some rhythmic aids in our rehearsal to put it all together. So
all
a
right.
click track, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but that's gone now.
Well, it's not here today. That's right. Yeah.
Right. So. Well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for
coming
having us.
In. Thank you all of you for coming in. Synergy Percussion. The performance is tonight. I'll give you the details after we've heard the beginning of part two of Timber by Michael Gordon. And Synergy Percussion will be performing Michael Gordon's Timber tonight at Trackdown Studios in Sydney's Moore Park. And if you go to the music show's website, you will find more details there. You will have heard, of course, that Richard Gill died, and there is a memorial concert happening this morning in Sydney at the Sydney Opera House. The tickets sold out in a flash. But they're streaming the event on the Sydney Opera House website, And the audio will be up there for a while afterwards, so you'll still be able to catch it if you weren't able to be there. The memorial concert features the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, the Sydney Philharmonia, Sydney Chamber Choir, and the Conservatorium High School Chamber Choir. And you can also hear our tribute to the late Richard Gill from a couple of weeks ago on The Music Show if you go to The Music Show's website or to the ABC Listen app. That's it for today. Tomorrow on The Music Show, we'll talk partly about Richard Gill, actually, with the composer Brett Dean. We'll also find out about life after Hamlet. And the American jazz singer Sharnay Wade will be in, and she is singing songs of Gil Scott Heron and Brian Jackson, and we're listening now to some of their work. This is from Winter in America, from Gil Scott Heron's 1974 album of the same name.
And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows what to say. And ain't nobody fighting, 'cause nobody knows.